Welcome to episode 148 of Coffee Pods and Wads. As always, this episode is sponsored by Rain Body Fuel, the ultimate fitness focused drink to support your performance. I've got the Hybrid Academy also on board now, offering you a discount on their site with Pods10 on checkout. I can't stress enough how good their gear is. I'm very picky, particularly when it comes to shorts and socks and stuff like that, but theirs is genuinely a cut above the rest, and their t-shirts are that kind of soft, stretchy mix as well. They told me when we got together, oh, you can say whatever you want, we'll give you a couple of samples to try out, and we know they'll speak for themselves, and genuinely they were really right. I can't recommend them highly enough. BurbossCoachingDevelopment.com will help develop a coach in his personal sense through self-discovery while learning academically about the psychological side of coaching, and you can use the code PODS for 20% off there. You can also use the code PODS if you put it in your subject line of an email to the gymnastics course. It'll get you a discount for all of their on-site courses that they've got coming up. Sorry, a bit all over the place. We had a baby this week, but we're back. We have another episode. This week's guest is Sam Briggs. Sam is a CrossFit Games champion, multi-year regionals, games, national champ athlete. To be honest, he's real insight into what is possible when it comes to human performance potential and just longevity in sport. I think what she's done is absolutely amazing. We chat about her training, how it's changed, qualifying for the age groups and competing through pain and injury, as well as her plans to qualify for the games at the age of 40 for one final spin next year. Enjoy, listen, share and tag. So thanks, man, for doing this, first of all. I really appreciate you taking time out. How's the body feeling post games? Are you back, like, are you starting to kind of train? I saw you doing like some strongman stuff. Are you just kind of doing training that you're interested in now, or are you starting to ramp back up again?
Yes, I had a full week of doing nothing straight after the games, and then just kind of like got into doing a few bits. And then this week's probably the first week where it's been kind of not as intense as kind of like the games training, but kind of a getting back into a little bit more normality, a couple of like 2-a-days, but nothing like too crazy. So we're like trying to focus on a few different kind of approaches to training this year. So we're trying to lay a few foundations right now, going into when we start the next like training block. So just like looking at strength has always been like hard for me to gain. So we're just looking at maybe trying a few different ways. I've already announced that this is going to be kind of like my last year focusing as a individual competitor, so it's kind of like, well, we've got nothing to lose, let's experiment with a few different things, let's see how things go, and if at the end of the year kind of reassess things around like December time, because worst case scenario, if it's not working, we can just revert back to how we trained the last couple of years in the run-up to when the season starts.
Yeah, I mean, I assume a point in time comes where you build up a certain threshold that just never goes away, that like you can, like, muscle memory and stuff, just it'll take maybe a week, 2 weeks to get back to where you were because you've done it for so long.
So like kind of like the fitness side of things has never really been like a big issue for me. It's always that heavier workouts, the strength side. So just playing about with a few things, kind of ideas that we've thrown around over the last couple of years, but it's never really been the right time to kind of experiment with. So it's just one of those points where it's like, okay, it's the final year, it's like, why not give it a try and just like experiment with a few new ideas, try a few different training methodologies and like see if any of them stick.
Have you gone beyond the point of like, you know, being sore from a, like being really sore from a training day, whereas now you're going to find that again where you're doing something slightly different, you're like, oh fuck, I can't walk up the stairs?
But it's not even that, it literally was the week off that I had after the games. So last Monday's training, I could hardly walk the next day, and like it was nothing crazy. And then every day, like progressively, a new body part got sore, but nothing went away. So by the end of last week, I was just like, what is this feeling?
Like one of those like full body casts, just lying in bed.
I was like, how come like my legs are still sore from what I did on Monday, and now like my traps, my lats, my pecs, like everything had just like added on to it as the week went on. But luckily I had a rest day on Sunday, and back training on Monday, and things feel a lot better.
Yeah, that's good. It's interesting though, because I always find like that, say like we'd have fairly consistent training in our gym. Like if you looked at like a week in 2019, it was very similar to a week in 2020 and 2021, you know, like it's fairly consistent. But then I know recently like Joe got rogue landmine presses in like in a delivery, and we'd never had them before, and fuck me, like it's like, so like we'd have done Russian twists with a plate or whatever, but then doing like landmine twists, like I woke up this morning, I did it for the first time yesterday, and I woke up this morning, I was like, the fuck is wrong with my like sides, like why are my sides so sore? And it took me a minute to realize, and even like push press with it, like it's like it'll be interesting to see what happens when you tweak your training from what you have been doing, because like small little changes in like say things that change the range of movement even just slightly, or think like different equipment, I can have such a drastic effect on like DOMS and new parts of your body, like kind of being like, oh shit, okay, we're doing something different here.
Funny you should say about the landmine. So we were doing actually landmine cleans.
Okay.
So we've been like trialing out a few different things. I love doing kind of the pig, even though like what wasn't my best event. I love doing that sort of like odd object thing. Yeah. So that's one of the things that we're trying to incorporate more of, is kind of like that odd object. So there'll be a lot more like sandbag work. We're doing more tire work. And that's why we're using the landmine, because you can still get the explosion of the hip, but it's something different other than a barbell.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're in your home life there, I was just thinking like it must be hard to switch off CrossFit when both of you are so involved and have been so involved for so long. Is it weird like having something that takes up so much of both of your year and time, and then be like, okay, let's just like shut the fuck up about it for a while and talk about something else?
It's a good job that we both love it. I mean, the dogs definitely help, because like they don't care about CrossFit. They don't care about what you've done. They just want attention. So like taking them for a walk and like playing with them is a definite like welcome break to CrossFit. Yeah. And Nicole actually took a year off from CrossFit totally during the lockdown last year. So she's actually only just started back training. She got itchy feet while we were training for the games. So like when Emma and Adrian were here, she was like, okay, I've got itchy feet, and started actually doing CrossFit again. So I think it was good for her to find something different. She did her real estate license, and so has been doing that for the last year. So hopefully she can now find a good balance between doing the real estate stuff and training.
And speaking of like switching off and like distraction and stuff, do you like read, do you listen to podcasts? Like how do you get your downtime away from like sport and training?
I love movies.
Okay. What kind?
Any kind. I'm just so we watched the Jungle Cruise, the new one with the Rock on Sunday.
That's not the kind of movie I was expecting you to come out with there, to be honest.
I was like, well, that's what I mean. It's like anything. Yeah. So the week before we watched the new Black Widow one. So like literally like I could sit and watch any movie. Yeah. I just like being lost in like a different world.
Yeah.
Which is the same with reading. So as much as I'd like to just sit and watch a movie every night, I try to just like leave that for the weekends. And on a night, once I've settled the dogs, I read to them.
Read to them. And are you reading them like dog-based like romantic novels, or like stuff that you're interested in and they can just listen to it?
They like a bit of sports psychology.
Okay,
they're both into that.
You don't read them like the Chronicles of Lassie or something. You stick to stuff that you're interested in.
Yeah, it has to be something that I'm interested in, and they just have to like put up with it.
Did you read them your own book?
No. I don't think they'd be interested in that. They already know what I do. Yeah.
They're like, oh, we've heard this one. We've lived through this one. How did you find releasing your own book and having, like, I guess, something tangible belonging to you out there and like on shelves and stuff?
It was really weird at first. I'd kind of like toyed with the idea a few times, but I had like no idea where to start to write a book. And then somebody approached me, and he was a ghostwriter. So it was like took that process out of like what I had to do. It was literally he would come and interview me, and then he would put my words into words and into lines on a page, and then the hardest part for me was actually afterwards editing it and going back through, because obviously sometimes the storyline, the timeline had been like a little bit out, or the way I've said it was interpreted incorrectly. So the hardest part was after it had been written, going through and making sure that everything was correct and that I was happy with how it sounded like going out.
How do you find being interviewed? Obviously, like with the book and stuff, you've got like a timeline where you can, you know, it lasts a long time, that process. So you have a long time to say like, yeah, maybe I won't tell that story, or maybe I'll tell that story in a different way or whatever. How do you find doing like podcasts and, you know, like say post-event interviews and stuff like that?
I've definitely got a lot better at them. I think for me, I didn't really come into the like CrossFit limelight until I was like 29. So I'd lived 29 years of my life not really like doing that sort of thing. Yeah. We had so I was a watch commander in the fire service, so we had media training for if we were at big fires, and obviously the news crews came, so we had training on how to like put together sentences, not to say the wrong things, and how to like word things so that we're not broadcast on the local or national news.
Yeah, just being like, fuck me, it's a big fire.
So at least I've had like some kind of like media training before.
I suppose it's very different as well, though, because if you're, I assume in a scenario like that, you need to be like somber and like, you know, calming and not like quite serious, I suppose.
Not give away too much.
Like no secrets belonging to the businesses or anything that are in danger or whatever. Whereas like when you're on, coming off the CrossFit floor, you have to be like enthusiastic and you have to be, you know, like, I guess, entertaining.
Great. I love it.
Yeah, instead of the building on fire, it's your lungs or your legs or whatever instead. So, and then, obviously you've been in, you're obviously in demand, I suppose, because even just like the length of time that you've been in the sport, you're a household name in the sport for like across the decade for people who have been interested in the sport, I suppose, since the start. And then people who are just finding it, someone who's just found it for the first time this year will be aware of you because you're still there, you're still competing. So like, do you go through a phase of like, say at the start, saying yes to everything and then becoming more picky about who you talk to or who you do interviews with or whatever? Or like, is it kind of like part of the job where you just accept that you're going to be asked to do things and you can't do everything, but you'll do as much as you can, I guess?
Yeah, so I think I just try and get a balance. So Thursdays are typically my recovery day, so it's a little bit easier for me to like take the time to talk to somebody rather than thinking, oh my God, I've just written my training out for the day and I've got all of this to do. And then I've got to talk to somebody and then I've got to walk the dogs. And I'm like, and then I've got to do this and that. And it's like, they can get a little bit too much. So I definitely made that decision that if I'm doing things, it's on a Thursday and then I'm not as rushed. And I try to like space things out a little bit rather than, because sometimes, like especially like after the games, that's when there's a lot more demand for it. And rather than saying yes to, say, 10, 15 people, the interviews are probably going to be similar. So then it kind of like floods, kind of like the podcast market. So it's kind of like try and pick like a few different styles of like podcast. So hopefully the style of the interview or the questions will be slightly different. So just try to be a little bit more kind of selective, and it's not necessarily a no to somebody, but it could be, okay, yes, but we'll do it maybe like say near the Rogue Invitational. So try and pick a different time scale, so there's something new to talk about rather than saying yes to everybody at the same time and then having 15 of basically the same podcast coming out at the same time.
Yeah, well, I try to be different, so let's put it to the test and see see what happens. You mentioned earlier on that you were a firefighter in your, I guess, early or pre-CrossFit days. How does someone like leave school and think, okay, I want to like walk into fires? How does that start?
I kind of like went on different paths for a while. At first I wanted to be a teacher.
I wouldn't advise it. It's terrible.
It's just kind of, I think you always look to kind of like your parents and your grandparents, like your upbringing. So, my grandma was a high school biology teacher. My granddad was a chemistry lecturer at university. My uncle was an English teacher. So it was teaching kind of like in the family. So, and I was interested in maths and biology at the time. So I was kind of like going down the route to become a maths and biology teacher. So then a big like change was, I was like, this is not for me. I wanted to be more active. And so my dad was a policeman. My uncle was in the RAF. My mum was a nurse. So I was kind of like looking to, okay, maybe I'd go down the route of maybe some kind of like service. So I actually applied for the police and the fire service at the same time. And I went through all the stages of both and got to the interview stage for both of them. And then that was when I was like, okay, which job do I actually like want to do the most? And I was kind of like, well, not many people like police, but everybody likes the fire service. It's kind of like weighing things up, and the fire service kind of like spoke out to me more. So I decided to pursue a career in the fire service.
It's like I can't put into words how terrified I'd be of, you know, like there's something kind of hypnotic about fire. Like there's something like looking at a fire is really easy to just like slip into just a vegetative state looking at it. So
honestly, when you're doing your fire service training, so part of the training is you're in this purpose-built building and they can replicate different fire scenarios. So you're actually sat in the building and they replicate a backdraft and a flashover. So you're actually real-time experiencing it in the fire. So that you can spot these scenarios if you're going into a building as a warning, like, oh shit, we need to get out of here. And like when you're actually in a flashover, so a flashover is when every single thing in a room, every item all of a sudden combusts. So the whole room just sets on fire. And the warmth and the peacefulness of actually being in there, like you said, it's hypnotic. It is actually like, this is... But then on the like flip side, fire is so destructive and like so violent, but it actually is really like hypnotic and like peaceful. It's like such a crazy like contrast.
How did you get started? Was CrossFit during that time, like, was it like a way to keep fit while you were doing it, or was it something that came afterwards?
It was definitely something that came like a lot further down the line. We in the fire service, it was kind of around that 2008 time, the fire station that I was at, we would get the men's health and men's fitness magazines would have like the weekly workouts or the daily workouts. And so when we were doing our PT sessions, on shift, we would always get a magazine out, kind of like pick it, and the workouts that we were doing, unbeknown at the time, were very kind of like CrossFit-esque. It was all that like functional fitness, but like you're doing your 5 rounds for time, or you're doing a minute on this station, a minute on this station. So when I moved to Manchester, I was just going to Virgin Active. I just retired from playing football, and I started running for Salford as something to do to fill in the gap of not playing football anymore. And one of the personal trainers at Virgin Active saw how I was like working out, so I just kind of like replicate the workouts that I'd been doing in the fire station. And he was like, I think you'd really like this thing called CrossFit. I'm like, cross what? He's like, go home and Google it. And he had to write it down for me because I'm like, still like, what is it? He's like, if you like the sound of it, I go to a gym nearby. I'll take you to your first class. I really think you'd enjoy it. So I went home that night. I Googled it. I was like, looks a bit weird, really. But I'm like, hey, might as well give it a go, see what it's like. I went and did my first class, and I was like, yes, like this is what I've been looking for. I like cancelled my Virgin Active membership and joined up on the same day.
That's crazy. I always think of those people who introduce other people to CrossFit who go on to be like ridiculously good at it. Like, I imagine that guy like sitting in a bar someday being like, you know, Sam Briggs, I was the one who told her, like, so, like,
she would have still been in Virgin Active if I
knew. Who did you play football for?
I used to play for Bradford City and then Leeds City Vixens.
Okay. Are you from Yorkshire originally?
Yeah, I'm from Leeds.
Oh, okay. And then did you move to Manchester as a firefighter or after?
No. So I moved to Manchester to be with my partner at the time. So I was a firefighter in West Yorkshire. Okay. So I never transferred over to Greater Manchester. I used to commute back over to Leeds.
Okay. And did you say you played, you said Bradford, and what was the second team you said?
Leeds City Vixens.
And would that not have been like a frowned upon move to go from Bradford to Leeds? No.
Yeah, they were pretty good rivals, but...
Yeah. I'm just thinking back to your like, who's more hated, policemen or like police or firefighters? And then it's like, well, will I leave Bradford to go to Leeds? It's like, you seem to have forgotten about that.
It would have been worse to go from Leeds to Manchester.
Okay, yeah,
that's fair. At least I retired from playing football and didn't transfer to Manchester.
Yeah, that's fair. Was there a moment then where like you went all in CrossFit, like an event or a moment in training or something that sparked a decision, or like, I guess a realization that like you're capable of being elite at it or being very, like, you know, excellent at it?
So it wasn't until so I started in 2009 and did a competition down in Swansea, in that was kind of like the November December time 2009. Think it was like the start of the like divided we fall stuff.
Okay.
But it was like the CrossFit Velocity, the first like comp down there. And so that was my first CrossFit competition. And I think there was only like three girls like entered. There might have been a couple more, but there definitely wasn't that many. Like,
top three guaranteed.
Well, I took first, and the first event was a trail run, and I beat all the guys on the trail run. So I definitely like already had the kind of like engine there. Yeah. And then the start of 2010, there was no open that year. That didn't come until 2011. There was what was called sectionals at the yeah. time. So a few people from the gym were going down to Maidenhall to do the UK and Ireland sectionals.
Oh, is that you just turned up and did it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you must have had to like register like the week before or something, yeah. but you didn't have to like qualify for it at the time.
Yeah.
So they were all like, you should come down. It's going to be a fun weekend. They were going to hire a minibus and all drive down together and just make it a fun weekend. So I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Sounds good. See if I can get somebody to swap a shift with me because I was meant to be working. We'll go down. So I went down and I won the female side. There was more than three people turned up that time. So I won for the females and qualified for regionals, which was going to be in Sweden. So I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. Weekend in Sweden, it'll be fun. Again, had to make sure that I got some time off work. Went to Sweden and finished second next to Annie.
Yeah.
So I didn't do too bad. Qualified for my first games. I was like, oh, okay. This all of a sudden got a little bit real. Had zero leave left. So I had to beg people at work to do some shift swaps and managed to get my first sponsorship.
Very good. A
company called BeaverFit. They paid for my flight out to the US.
Were they involved in CrossFit? Like, they were obviously aware of it, like.
Yeah, they'd started making rigs.
Okay.
In the space.
So. I was just thinking of you in the gym in Manchester being like, what is it? And then like trying to tell your friends at work, like, oh, you stop shifting me. I need to go to America for a CrossFit competition. They'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Oh, right. Yeah, work. Yeah, no, we were starting because I loved it. I was making all the guys at work CrossFit workouts with me. So you were
the classic CrossFitter trying to get everyone else to do CrossFit.
Yeah. It'll be good for you. Everybody's going to do it. So, yeah, I basically had to work. I worked the Wednesday night. We flew out the Thursday. Oh, no, sorry. I worked the Tuesday night. We flew out the Wednesday. I registered the Thursday and we started competing on the Friday. So there wasn't much like preparation or acclimatization going on. It was literally like, okay, I can get 7 days off work. So we fly now, we get back. But yeah, I loved it. And it was, I came 19th that year and only the top 10 did the final.
Yeah.
And I was sat in the stands watching the final. And I was like, I want to be back here next year and I want to be in that final.
Yeah.
I was still doing triathlons and duathlons at the time, and I'd already qualified for the world champs duathlon. So I wanted to kind of like still do that. So I had that up in Edinburgh in the September, and that was the last like competitive duathlon that I did, and then concentrated on CrossFit. So still working full time as a firefighter, but pursuing CrossFit as my kind of sport and not trying to do the triathlons and duathlons on top of that. And that made the difference then going into 2011, and I finished fourth at the games.
Yeah, it's crazy though. Like, do you ever look back on like that videos of the 2010 games and just be like, Jesus, like everything was so different. Like, as in the setting was so different. Everything was real like basic. Like, there was like everything just looked kind of like, oh shit, we need a box over here. Like, everything was just kind of thrown together. And then even like, I was watching a video of you earlier on doing pull-ups, and it was just like, imagine if someone turned up at the games now and did pull-ups. Like, that looked like that, people would be like, how the fuck did this person get in here? Like, it's so crazy how much has progressed.
The first event was Amanda, and that was my one rep max snatch. I could power snatch it, but I couldn't squat snatch it. I wasn't like a very good technical lifter. Yeah. And so I was getting so many reps because I was power snatching it and then riding it down. And luckily I could do a few muscle ups. It was kind of like do two, drop down. And it was the proper like false grip muscle up. But yeah, I loved it. That's when I like truly fell in love with the sport and knew that I wanted to like compete in it. Like, everything about it was just amazing.
Yeah. There's so many, like, talking points because you've done it for so long. It's, like, it's hard to whittle down, like, because otherwise I'd just be here for, like, 4 hours. But, like, even, say, if we look at, like, you won it in 2013. So, like, starting at the top, I suppose, like, how confident were you going into the games that year that, like, okay, yeah, I have a real shot here? Or was it still the aim to go compete and be, I guess, like a relevant competitor, or was the aim to win it that year?
No, the aim was to podium that year. That was 2 years in the making. So I came fourth in 2011, and then I had to withdraw from competition in 2012 because I broke my kneecap. So it was always the progression going into 2012 was to podium in 2012.
Yeah.
And then obviously the knee injury, like going in, like we were never sure, like kind of if we'd get back to being competitive. And so I made the decision that if I was competitive to go all in 2013, I started taking on like some extra shifts at work and basically saved everything I could and applied for a 6-month sabbatical. So when the Open started in 2013, I worked my last night shift and then had 6-month break. So I went all in on training. So everything that we did that year was to podium. That was like the ultimate aim. It was never like I'm going to go and win the games. It was like the podium was the goal.
Did you go back to work after?
No, because I won the games then. Basically, I still didn't think that. Kind of in my head, I was like 31 at the time. I'm like, oh, my like competitive career, I'm like, this is probably like my last year. I've just won the games and I'm thinking that I'm going to be too old to compete next year. So I applied for another 6 months. I just extended it for a year because a lot more opportunities opened up then to like go out to Australia and do a competition and go and do various other things. I was like, I'm never going to get these opportunities again. I want to make the most of it. And it wasn't until I think it was the beginning of 2014 that they were making budget cuts in the fire service. So they were recalling everybody on sabbatical and I wasn't ready to go back. Had I have had that full year, I don't know. I think the decision would have been a lot harder for me to make. But because I was definitely not ready to go back when they were calling us back, it was kind of like forced on me to like resign from the fire service.
And then like, so coming off a win in 13 and then like facing into a new season, you're obviously like, you know, making the most of it. As you say, these opportunities are coming up and like things that, you know, might never come up again. I mean, like they have, but like at the time you didn't realize, I suppose, but like, it's also I guess, the difficult second album, and then you've got a target on your back as well of like, everyone knows who you are now. And if you're going into a competition scenario, you're the one people are chasing down. So like, when you don't qualify in 14, having like left your job and gone all in, like, is the fire burning bright as ever to compete? Or is there a period where it's more like, oh shit, like, you know, maybe you're just left with embers, I guess.
No, I don't, there was never like kind of the, oh shit moment. It was very kind of like frustrating moment. 2014, I was stronger and fitter than I was in 2013. So it was kind of more frustrating that I couldn't like showcase that at the games. I think we would have seen a lot better, a lot more kind of like well-rounded Sam Briggs at the games in 2014 than you saw in 2013. We worked very hard kind of like on my like strength and a lot of things that I was weaker at. Unfortunately, the handstand walk wasn't one of those things that I'd improved like as like a personal like stance, but unfortunately, in Europe, you have a hell of a lot of ex-gymnasts that are walking two lengths of the stadium unbroken, and you're like... So I would say it was more frustrating, and that probably carried on into kind of the off-season of 2014 to 2015, and that ultimately was kind of like my downfall going into the 2015 season. I'd done so many off-season competitions just because I felt kind of like the best I'd ever felt. And then it was the week before the Open started, my back went. I had two bulging and a herniated disc the week before the Open. I was like, it's okay, we can get through the Open. There's never anything heavy in the Open. And that's the first year that Dave Castro put a max clean and jerk in the first workout.
It's like he heard you. Yeah.
I was like, no way, no way. After I didn't qualify in 2014, am I not going to give it everything I had in 2015? Somehow I made it through the Open. Got my back sorted after the Open, started training somewhat normally, getting lifts kind of back to where they needed to be. And it literally was the week before regionals, I broke my foot.
Were you in a new region that year as well?
Yeah, I was living in Miami at the time. So I was going to be competing out of the Atlantic regional.
And is that like, does that ramp up the pressure, or does it feel like a fresh start when it's a different place?
It wasn't really kind of on my mind. It was...
I suppose if you have a sore back and a broken foot, it's probably the last of your worries.
I think as well, having like come from competing out of Europe, which was such a strong and like female side to like compete out of, that... it never really like kind of, you don't really think of it like that because you've always been in one of the harder regions to kind of like qualify out of. So yeah, literally I got the news from the x-ray. I was put straight in a boot. The podiatrist was straight away like, I can't believe you've walked in here. How are you not in like so much more pain than you are? I was like, oh, it's, when they wanted to x-ray, I was like, oh no, it's nothing, I've just sprained it, I think. Like, no, it's broken, you need to be in a boot right now. And I got back to the gym, I like spoke to my coach, I went into the staff room, and literally, it was like a 10-minute decision. And I went back out into the gym in my lifters, ready to train. And he's like, looked at me And I was like, I have not gone through everything I've gone through to give up right now. And Selena Fortunato lived, I think it was like maybe a 90-minute, two-hour drive away from me. I sent her the photos. I sent her the x-ray. And the next day, it was, I can't remember whether it was Mother's Day or her mum's birthday, but her mum was with her. And she drove her mum all the way to the gym to spend the day taping my foot up in different ways to find a way to offset the weight so that I could compete at regionals. So that was her mum's birthday or Mother's Day, whichever it was, coming along to see me train. And then she flew out to regionals with us to tape me up every morning on before the events, and then treat me on an evening to make sure that I could get through the events and make it back to the games.
And how tunnel visioned are you there? Like, say in hindsight, are you kind of like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have like competed that year, or
shouldn't have competed that year. But again, it's that thing. I think so many people like put it in your mind that kind of when you're 30, your athletic career is over with.
Yeah, yeah.
So I already thought I was too old going in and winning the games at 31. I was like, wow, I've been lucky and I've come and won the games at 31. So then I missed competing at 32. So now I'm 33. I'm like, I'm practically ancient. I'm like thinking this is my last year. And so it was like, I have to do everything I can to get back to the games.
Yeah.
But I think it's just that narrative that people like feed you. It's like, okay, I'm 39 now and I've just competed at the games still.
Yeah.
I'm like, doesn't have to be the same for everybody.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we'll get on to this year later on, I suppose. But even like interspersed with your individual performance, you also won like the Invitational twice with Europe. And then like the majority of CrossFit assumed the USA would win like all the time. So that must have been like especially sweet when Europe were crowned champs. Like,
yeah. So the first win, it was actually, we were Team World.
Okay,
it was,
yeah.
First time, because America can take on the world, we were two of us from Europe. That's nothing against America. I live here. I love it.
Yeah. I understand the narrative there of like, yeah, it is, you know, even with CrossFit, it's very like US centric. So then I suppose everywhere else is the rest of the world if it's not in the US, I guess.
So it was two of us from Europe, two from Australia, and two from Canada. Did we have
Canada? Yeah.
So that made up our team. So we were never meant to win.
Yeah.
That was never kind of an option, like going in there. So we tried to play more tactical and kind of play to our strengths. So little things like there was a workout and it had some heavy overhead squats in. On my team, there's Cara Saunders and there's Camille. And then there's me. I am not a good overhead squatter. Cara and Camille can overhead squat for days. The minimum like work requirement was you had to do one rep. So basically Cara did a big set. Camille did a big set. I did my one to give them a little bit of rest, and then they finished off.
Yeah.
Whereas the American team, they were trying to get each person to do a big set. And that was the same for them. They had Talena and Lindsay Valenzuela, who are both like strong overhead squatters. And then they had Val Vobrel, who probably would have been better off doing the same as me, doing one rep and then feeding back to them. Instead, they were trying to get her to do like a bigger set, which was then slowing things down for their team.
Who decides that? Who broaches the subject of tactics with the team, like?
So you had a team coach. We had Mads Jacobsen at the time, but I think it just becomes like,
there's a responsibility on the athletes themselves, I guess, to, like, you obviously had to say, it's probably better if I just do the minimum.
I mean, like, for me, like, I'd just come off, that was 2013. I'd just come off from winning the games. I could have been all big bots, yeah. Like, I'm going to go and do a big set. But I'm like, I'm not a strong overhead squatter. I'm like, yeah. I'm going to play to my team. And then that was the same. We had the max clean and jerk. So if, you had like three, whoever lifted first, second and third, whoever lifted first could win, I think, I can't remember if it was like 5 points. Whoever lifted like second won 3 points. Whoever lifted third could win 1 point, something like that. I can't remember. So we knew that it was a risk on our behalf, but we knew that they would put Rich and Lindsay going for 5 points.
Yeah.
So I lifted against Lindsay. I'm never going to clean and jerk as heavy as Lindsay. Sorry, I can't remember which order the guys were, but we put our weakest guy there. And then, so then we had Cara lifting against Talena and Camille lifting against Val. So we ended up picking up more points.
Yeah, in the second two.
From the other two. So we threw away whatever the highest points were and then took up more points on the other two.
Yeah.
So.
And then you, like, so you mentioned Rich there, and you also were, I suppose, introduced to him. Like, we'll choose to look at it this way. You introduced him to team events with Rogue for the team series, and then, like, clearly showed him how to go about it, considering how dominant he is now with it.
Yeah, trained him well.
He's done okay for himself, I guess.
He's been too bad.
When you're invited to do, like, say, the Rogue, well, to become a Rogue athlete, first of all, I suppose, and then to do the team series and, you know, to be part of the world team and then the Euro team, like, all of those accolades and achievements, like, are they individually, are they like pinch me moments, or is it more of a feeling of like vindication or like, I suppose, reward for your work?
They're kind of like the bonus, the fun part after you've like competed. Like, I definitely enjoy the individual side of competing at the games, but I love being a part of a team and doing other like fun stuff. So like being invited to do the invitationals, being invited like to do the Rogue team series and stuff. They're just like the bonuses on top of it. It's so much fun. You get to know the other athletes on a more personal level. And it's just nice to kind of work for somebody else and with somebody else rather than it just being you.
Mm.
So I've always loved that aspect. And the Invitational was definitely kind of like one of the highlights of the year. And it was very like sad when they stopped doing the Invitational and kind of the team series just kind of like fell away.
Yeah.
I think big things could have kind of like come from them, especially because they always have the games obviously in America. So when they had the Invitational and they take it to different places, it was an opportunity for those who might not be able to afford to fly to America to go watch the games. They can actually like go somewhere and see their favorite athletes all competing. So it was kind of like the games for those people.
Yeah. Do you think they might bring it back? Have you heard any talk of anything?
I've not heard any. We're not. I think some people think that the athletes get like privy to like information, and a lot of the times we don't find anything out until everybody else does.
Yeah. I heard. Oh, I'll tell you about it after. 2018 then was another very Sam Briggs year, I suppose, where you had a big injury, fracturing another joint. And then like you did ligament damage and stuff, which just sounds like fucking horrific. Like it's like a broken kneecap and a broken elbow joint are just like, yeah, oh, it's just disgusting. But then the
elbow was a lot worse than the knee. Like the knee was kind of, it hurt at the moment that it broke, but then it was like I could get through training.
Yeah.
Like I would spend some time warming up and then I could train, and it was more the pain afterwards.
Yeah.
It would just like, when you sat driving would be the worst.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, but the elbow, like the pain when the like elbow went, I couldn't talk to anybody. I was crying. I don't cry. And I was crying on the way home, still in denial that there was nothing wrong with my elbow. Yeah. I was like, I pulled up outside my apartment at the time in Manchester, and there was somebody stood outside smoking. So I'm like, pull yourself together. You can't be seen crying. I like got into the apartment. I was like, I just need to lay down for a minute. I laid down and I'm like physically like crying my eyes out. I'm like, okay, there's something definitely wrong.
Had you driven home?
Yeah. I was still in denial. I'm like, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah. It's really mind over matter, and just matter won out in the end.
And then I'm like, okay, there's something wrong. My housemate at the time wasn't in, and I'm like messaging her. I'm like, I think I need to go to the hospital. She's like, I'm an hour away, and I'm like, I can't wait that long. So I only live 10 minutes away from the gym. I got one of the coaches to come and pick me up, and he took me to the hospital, and my like flatmate at the time came to meet me at the hospital. And the only way I can describe it is I was having to breathe like a pregnant lady to try and control the pain. I'm like,
Jesus.
I was like, I've never felt anything like it. And the specialist there told me I'd bruised my tricep. I'm like this. I am not just bruised my tricep. The first nurse that came in after the x-ray was like, oh, because I had regionals in 2 weeks, I think it was, or 3 weeks. And she's like, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but you're not going to be able to compete in 3 weeks. You've got multiple fractures in your elbow joint. And so I'm like, Okay. And they were getting me some stuff to take away the pain. And then the specialist came in and she's like, okay, I need to know if you're on any medication. And I'm like, no, I'm not on anything. She's like, no, anything. And like pointing to my muscles. And I'm like, okay, we're going down that route now, are we? I'm like, I'm not on anything. And she's like, still implying. I'm like, I compete in a sport called CrossFit. We get drugs tested regularly, blah, 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 blah. I am not on anything. And then she was like, okay, you need to rest it, because obviously you've not been resting. And I'm like, where are you going with this? She's like, yeah, it's just a bruised tricep. I'm like, the other nurse, so I'm starting to get mad. I'm like, there's no point getting mad. Like the other nurse says there was multiple fractures. We can't tell this soon. I was like, okay.
So you can't tell that there is fractures, but you're able to tell that there definitely isn't.
So I'm like, okay, let's reframe this. I'm like, okay. She's like, you need to come back in a week for when the swelling's gone down for an MRI. And I'm like, so, okay. I'm like, this is like my livelihood. Would you advise that I go and get an MRI tomorrow morning? That's not our policy. No, but from a specialist point of view, because I am meant to be competing in 3 weeks, would you advise that maybe I go private? That's not what we do. And so I wasn't getting anything from her. So I got in touch with my physio at the time, and he like saw me first thing the next morning, wrote me a script. I was in for an MRI that lunchtime. We got the results. They rushed the results back for me straight away. And basically I ruptured my medial lateral ligament and there was like bone fragments in there and all sorts. So the pain that I was having when I'd actually done it and the ligament had gone, there was a bone fragment in the front and the back of the elbow joint, which had opened up the elbow joint finally like rupturing the ligament, and then when it closed on the nerve, so it was trapping the nerve, and that's why I was getting like so much pain from it. And we rushed the images over to the surgeon who did my shoulder, and I flew out the next day to Ireland to go and meet with him. And he was trying to get me in for the surgery the Friday. And luckily for me, there was no beds. So they scheduled the surgery for the Monday. The Saturday morning, I woke up and I had a little bit more range in the elbow.
So you chose to rest for the weekend and prepare yourself mentally for the surgery.
So I said to Emma McQuaid, who I was staying with at the time, I was like, so tomorrow, if I've got a little bit more extension and I can meet the the movement requirements, how do you reckon I do the master's qualifiers? And she was like, yes, let's do it.
Like literally the only other person you could ask who'd say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
So Sunday morning we wake up and I'm like, basically almost got full extension. I'm like, that'll like meet the movement requirements. So we strapped it up and we did all the workouts back to back because we didn't know how it would respond. Because obviously if I lost the extension, I wouldn't be able to do the workouts. So it's like, okay, let's go. And we just did all the workouts and qualified for masters. So that hopefully, like, if surgery went well the next day, I would at least still have
an option
games that year.
And when, so this is that in April then that you did that?
I think it was like March, April time. It was like,
and how long were you like laid up after the surgery? Was it like a quick recovery or?
No, like it was that bad. Like I thought it was going to be like my shoulder. So the shoulder, like straight away, like from day one, you can start, even though it's just kind of like leaning over and doing pendulums with your arm, you're actually starting to kind of like move the joint and starting to do stuff. I was in a cast for a week, and then I was in a fixed brace for 4 weeks, 2 weeks with zero movement. And then the next 2 weeks, it was gradual, more range put into the elbow.
And is it all like, you know, like when, so with your foot, your back, your knee, your elbow, it like the common theme seems to be like a bit of a, like a fuck it attitude of like, you know, like say someone in their 20s might be like, well, no, the sensible thing to do here for the longevity of my career is to take,
I still have X amount of years left.
Yeah. Whereas like, did it feel for you like, well, it's a shot to nothing because it's probably my last year anyway, or I'm probably, you know, next year might be my last year, so I might as well do something. Like, is that the kind of mindset that gets you into that position of like, will I do the online qualifiers for fun?
I don't know. I love competing. So I think like the first 2 days, like I had like an inch of range in my elbow. Yeah. So like all of a sudden on the Saturday when it was nearly there, like I was like, oh, I could actually like do this tomorrow.
Yeah, it's mad, really.
I don't know. Like, so 2016 is when I had to have my shoulder surgery, and that's when I was actually going to retire. Yeah. I was like, okay, my body's telling me like enough's enough. But I like bounced back from the shoulder surgery so well that we didn't intend to like come back as a competitor, but like everything felt so good and I felt like amazing. So we did I'd always wanted to do Dubai as a competition. So that was kind of the goal. It was never like, okay, let's get back for the CrossFit Games. I was like, oh, I'd love to go to Dubai and compete. I went out to Dubai and finished second. So then it was like, okay, maybe I can get back to the games. Obviously, got back to the games, and I think I finished 9th that year.
Yeah.
So.
Still have it.
So I was like, okay, I've still got it. And then like 2018, I was feeling amazing. And literally, like, they had a really good open in 2018. Everything's feeling good. And then their elbow, I'd had problems with the elbow since back to 2013. So it was kind of just like a ticking time bomb, yeah. I think. And it just finally went.
And then, so you won Dubai. Was it 2019 you won Dubai?
So that would have been the end of 2018 qualifying for the 2019 yeah. season.
And then you won Spirit of the Games in 2019 when yeah. probably the hardest year to win it because it was the most potential winners present. Like, just the field was so big.
We have 150 people to choose from.
Yeah, yeah. So like, this year was no different, I suppose. Like, one of the points of pride for me, like, I enjoy watching like the competitive element of sport. Like, I enjoy watching what the human body is capable of and what people are capable of and records being set and broken and all the rest, and like just incredible feats of like physical endurance and stuff. But like, a point of pride for me with athletes and people involved in the space is like, what else do they do? Like, you know, what else happens around them at the competition? And like, you know, we all heard stories about Shane Orr like picking up litter after the final event was over and stuff. And I think with you, like, every year there seems to be so many stories come out, especially this year. Maybe that we have more access this year, maybe people are sharing more quickly and more readily this year, and there's more like platforms to share on and stuff. But there seem to be more stories this year with, you know, like, I heard about you like settling Emma Carey like before the swim, just being like, you know, chill the fuck out, like, and helping her with her glass, her goggles and her hat and stuff. And then, you know, stepping forward for the run with Danielle when they look for volunteers. And like, obviously winning events and giving your best is always priority number one for any athlete like entering the competition floor. But like, it was helping other people, or like, you know, cheering on your fellow competitors and stuff, is that something that has always been there for you, or has it come to the fore the longer you've been around the sport?
I think I've always tried to be more approachable in the sport. I remember 2010 when I competed, like, it was very much an alone kind of like setting. I didn't even sit kind of in the athlete area because I didn't know anybody. I didn't kind of like feel like I was kind of like welcome or like a part of anything. And it was 2011 that kind of changed for me. And it was actually Ani Sakamoto that was like a big one in that factor. She's obviously one of the ones that you watched on the original videos and stuff. And she made me feel welcome and like that I should have been there. So I was like fine to hang in the like athlete warm-up area and stuff. And so that always stuck with me. So I always wanted to try and like pay that on. If there's other athletes, make sure that they feel like welcome. Don't just kind of like, you will always find that people, certain athletes will click with other athletes, and sometimes it can become like little camps. But don't forget that sometimes there's a new athlete coming in who hasn't made any of those relationships yet. So just make sure that people, even if it's just a smile or a hi, how are you feeling today? Just something that makes that person feel kind of like that they're welcome there.
When you're at the games this year then, and you see like Emma and Mallory, who are like essentially 10, like when you're looking at them, are you like, Jesus, like, this is, I've been around too long, like, this is crazy that these are here? Or is it like, because, you know, like that story, like, was, I find that emotional, like the idea of you like just before a massive event, the first event, and like a grueling event, to take the time to turn around to her and be like, you know, it's fine, like, and to settle her down. Is that like, you know, are those kind of memories now becoming the memories that make each year special for you?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting to see like athletes like those coming through where CrossFit has been their sport growing up. So they started CrossFit. I believe one of them started when she was like seven. So she's been doing it 10 years. So almost as long as I have, like, anyway. And I think the other one started when she was 10. So it's really cool to see kind of the evolution of the sport and these athletes coming through that they've trained CrossFit all their lives to be a CrossFit athlete, and just kind of like what possibilities is going to for the sport, kind of like how is it going to evolve over the next like couple of years. We've seen how it's evolved over the 12 years that I've been doing it. So imagine kind of like, are we going to see a big jump kind of in performance levels of athletes that haven't got bodies that are like beaten down from their previous sports?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, we don't know what's going to come, or is it going to be detrimental that they've just done CrossFit all that time?
Yeah.
I mean, from looking how they both performed this year, it doesn't look like it's going to be detrimental to the sport. They look pretty phenomenal. So on one hand, it's pretty scary. Sorry, the dog's not happy. Settle down. On one hand, it's pretty scary to see just kind of like the level that they are.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. But on the other hand, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
So competing against these when I'm kind of in the last stages of my career and it's their beginning stages, it's like, what can I pass on to these athletes that can help them create their legacy in the hope that they'll then pay it forward, just as Annie took care of me and my like beginning stages. Can they then benefit from something that I've learned and then pay it on to the next athletes that are going to come through?
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic. And it's the same, it's a similar mindset to your, I suppose, recusing yourself from the overhead squats of like, you know, knowing the importance of one decision and the ripple it can have like further on. I think, yeah, that's really good. You mentioned at the start that your own training is has changed a little bit, or you're changing it up this year. Obviously, like the batterings a body can take become like, you know, the threshold, so I suppose, becomes a bit lower as we go on. Like, is it for you now? Is it about like training smarter, or is it about like making certain sacrifices in areas like, say, you know, maintaining strength rather than building it, or like maintaining an engine rather than increasing it at this stage?
Yeah, definitely. We've had to, over the last couple of years, change how I train and go a lot on kind of like how I feel. And it's been a learning process. I think we've managed to like fine tune things and find what works for me, so that I'm able to still do a good amount of volume and a good amount of intensity without my body breaking down. It's definitely been a big learning process, and especially over last year when it was training through lockdown and stuff like that. Just experimenting with different things, and we've come to it now that my mornings are, in regards of training, are like pretty chill. There's not a lot of intensity on a morning. I do a lot of like rehab, a lot of movement work, some cardio and core work, and then my intense training, I'll do a big session. But it's just one big like strength, gymnastics, any Metcon, as opposed to going hard on a morning, trying to recover, and going hard on an afternoon. I'm finding that my body can recover a lot better with that more steadier morning. And even though my sessions are quite long on an afternoon, I'm able to get through them and still feel good. And we've found that working in 3-week cycles is good for me. Any longer than 3 weeks, I can be like feeling good, numbers are progressing, it looks good, and then my knee hurts. Looks good, my shoulder stops working. Looks good, my hips are out. So kind of like that 3-week is kind of where my tolerance level is at the moment. So that's what we work to. We work in 3-week cycles, and after every 3 weeks, we start a new cycle. So the intensity drops again. We build over the next 3 weeks. We drop, we build, we drop, we build.
Mm.
And that seems to be working for me at the moment.
And you mentioned a few times, you're probably the most talked about athlete when it comes to retiring. Like, I feel like every couple of years I hear that, like, oh, that's her last year, or this is going to be her last year. You're on the verge of what you've described yourself as one last year, potentially qualifying for the games at the age of 40. Is it true that CrossFit are preparing a fittest 40-year-old in history if you do qualify?
I think a lot has to like fall into place first. Every year it gets harder and harder to qualify for the games. So right now my concentration has to be kind of in smaller chunks. So we've got the Rogue Invitational coming up. So my entire focus is getting ready for the Rogue Invitational. Like I said, we're trying a few new things in training. So it's like, let's see how that works, and we'll get through the Rogue Invitational and hopefully have a good showing there. And then we reassess and we get ready. Hopefully I'll be doing Waterpalooza this year. Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about doing it again as a team. I loved it last year.
Is that be with Mickey, and is that the same team as last year or a different team?
So we don't know for sure yet. Depends on kind of like how travel's opened up and everything. Oh, yeah. But there's talk of maybe me, Emma McQuaid, Mickey, and potentially Josh again getting a team out there in January. So then that would be the focus. Let's go have fun as a team and see how Waterpalooza goes. And then after those two, we then like concentrate on the Open. And if things don't change, we then qualify for concentrate on the quarterfinals and then semifinals. And hopefully we have an in-person semifinals this year. So it's kind of trying to make the most of every opportunity this year and have the most fun. So kind of the motto that I'm going with this year is kind of like last one, best one.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to have my highest performance ever, or I'm going to qualify for X, Y, and Z. It just means that every opportunity I have, I make the most of it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have the best fun that I've ever had. I'm going to just make sure that this last year is my best one. Last one, best one.
That's good. Is there a temptation to, because I noticed earlier on when you said your last year, you said my last year as an individual competitor. So is there a temptation to become like a sort of ultimate CrossFitter, of like someone who goes along, wins the games, and then does all the age groups all the way up, or like does team? Or do you think that like, when you say last year's an individual, are you like, I might do some team competitions, but I'm not going to do the games team?
There's potential that I will do like some off-season competitions and stuff. The focus won't be there to be like an individual competitor anymore. Yeah. Like the amount of time and the amount of sacrifices, it's just like too great to like keep on doing that inevitably. It's like, and the toll it takes on my body, like recovery, like is harder and harder every year. So just taking a step back, I'll still do CrossFit because I love CrossFit. I love doing the training. I love like pushing myself. So I still will be training. I just don't know what the competitive season will look like for me if I'm not like taking it 100% anymore. Mm. Yeah. So it could be that I'm still fit enough to participate in some stuff, or it could be that I actually enjoy some downtime and I'm like, hey, I'm good.
Yeah. I was curious then, what's the biggest change you've seen? Obviously the season's, have been unsettled, we'll say, for a while, with like some changes and stuff. But even taking that part of it aside, what's the biggest change you've seen, say, in CrossFit in the time that you've been competing in it?
Regarding like athletes or?
I guess just the sport, and like, obviously there's, you know, there's always going to be improvements of technique and improvements of like strength numbers and stuff, but like, I guess maybe the type of people that you've seen on the competition floor, or how you've seen the competition floor itself develop, I suppose.
Yeah. I think eventually we'll kind of like reach a limit on kind of just how much the weights can increase. But then again, you get the outliers. There was it like a 15-year-old that snatched 202?
Yeah.
I'm like, how does that happen? What's all that about? But I think eventually you'll see kind of like a bit of a cap kind of like start to happen. So then you'll see, I think, the sport try and grow in other ways, like the threw in the kayak this year. I think they'll start, and then the freestanding handstand pushups. I think they'll start to try and find new ways to kind of like test athletes. So I think in a few years, Dave will have to start getting even more creative. Yeah. Rogue will have to start inventing some even more weird and wonderful things to do out on the field, because everybody will be used to flipping a pig.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, if you're challenging Rogue and Dave to think outside the box, I mean, you couldn't find two better groups of people to start doing that. So
I think what I'd like to see, I'd like to see the sport evolve. And I think Rogue are doing it with their Invitational. So the sport at the moment, the CrossFit Games, I think most athletes, unless you're in that top five, come away from the games out of pocket. Like people don't realize, like, we still pay to register for the games. So we pay for the open, we pay for the quarterfinals, we pay for the semifinals, we pay for the games. Then we have to pay all our travel. We have to pay our own hotel. CrossFit don't pay for anything. And a lot of people, especially this year, because travel was so expensive with all the restrictions, a lot of people come away from the games like out of pocket, but they compete because they love competing at the games. I think this year Rogue are doing a fantastic job of sorting out their Invitational. So they're putting the athletes up for 5 days in the hotel. They're giving athletes who are from North America $1,000 towards travel. If you live outside of North America, you're getting $2,000 to help you travel. And then last place at the moment, because all ticket sales go towards the prize purse. So the more tickets they sell, the higher the prizes go.
Yeah.
So at the moment, even if you come last at the Rogue Invitational, you're going to get $5,000.
Yeah. It's amazing, really, isn't it? Because I was on a call with Lazar Djukic yesterday when his invite came, and yeah, he was like so thrilled. And I was like, oh, it's probably a bit of a stretch though, getting there from Serbia. Like, and he's like, no, Rogue are paying for it. Like, Rogue are bringing us there. And yeah, it's just, it is remarkable. Like, it's, I think the thing with Rogue, that was really highlighted to me during the online invitational was like the lengths that they will go to make sure that the athlete feels special, and that the I guess the pageantry of it is right, like that people are given a show. And I think even it comes down to like the style of the actual invite, like the how it looks and how it appears and how it, like, you know, us non-competitors can only imagine how cool it would be to open an envelope and have this like sheer black embossed logo, and you know, like those little things make big things like that so special. And then aside from that, then you've also got this like fucking astronomical prize fund for the athletes, as you say, all the way down to last place.
Yeah,
I think it is hopefully something that we will start seeing spreading, where obviously Rogue are at an advantage, because I mean, if you go into any CrossFit gym and look around, you're going to see something Rogue somewhere. So like they've been leading lights, but yeah, you would like to see, I guess, the games follow suit of like, okay, you came last, but you're not out of pocket, I guess.
Yeah. I think like it doesn't even need to be like at that extent. That Rogue are doing it, that's obviously kind of like a dream scenario.
Yeah.
But like if it got to the stage where athletes like have like maybe the accommodation taken care of, or like it literally is, they pay down to last place. So at least last place gets enough money to at least go towards kind of like their travel. He's waking up now.
Yeah, that's our cue, I guess. Look, we'll finish up with a quick fire, and I'll let you entertain your dogs. He's been pretty good now, in fairness.
He has been very good.
So skier or rower?
Rower every time. I love the ski, but I'm just not good at it.
Yeah, Castro got really pissed off when I asked him that. I was like, skier or rower? And he was like, skier is stupid. It doesn't make sense. So, yeah. Clean or snatch?
When you get it right, so when it's a good lifting day, nothing feels better than like when you catch a good snatch. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's rare for me, but I agree. Deadlift or bench?
Ooh. I do like a bit of bench, but I'm probably a better deadlifter.
Yeah, that's fair. Rings or bar?
Rings.
Dumbbell or barbell?
Ooh. I do better in dumbbell events.
And then Ohio or Yorkshire?
Oh, that's evil.
I tend to throw in, like, if people have kids, I get them to pick their favorite kid, but I'd never actually make them answer. So you don't have to answer if you don't want to answer.
I'll always be a Yorkshire girl.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I'm very happy here.
That's good. Well, listen, thanks again for taking the time out to talk to us. And I really appreciate it. I appreciate everything you've done for the sport as well. It's like, it's truly remarkable to have to start it when you started it and to have the longevity you've had. And I think aside from, You've done some incredible things on the floor and on the ranch and just incredible athletic feats. But I think what speaks to me most is those stories that I hear about you trying to pass on from your own experiences, stuff that might help future generations of CrossFitters, I suppose. That's really meaningful. And yeah, hopefully we get a chance to chat again. And if we don't, best of luck with your fittest 40-year-old in the world quest, and enjoy the Invitational and the rest of your game season from there on out.
Thank you very much.